We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Mirror, read by Zeb Soans.
Woman attacks mum with vibrator and is hauled off to jail on an aggravated battery charge.
Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Miles Jupp and Holly Walsh. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Hugo Rifkin. Miles, whose 1% rise isn't scrubbing up too well?
Well, with those sort of numbers, it certainly has a sort of public sector sound to it. Is it the people that work in the National Health?
It is those
service?
Lovely people, yes.
Presumably it's not inflation-linked.
It's below inflation.
Oh, OK, fact, yeah, yes. So that's not good, is it?
No. Well, not for them. It's not good. No.
Well, or for anyone. I mean, presumably we want it to be good.
I don't
general
know,
rule.
If it forces NHS staff to do a bit of temping, it could cut waiting times. Yeah. If you can get a surgeon to remove your appendix in the car park for 50 quid, I would imagine that's good for all of us.
It's funny you should say that. My local hospital in Denmark Hill, this is a good example of the way that sort of priorities are done. If your ambition is to make the health service profitable rather than serviceable, there's a Costa inside the hospital, but the MRI scan is a mobile unit in the car park. Isn't that absolutely extraordinary?
Yes, that is.
Especially I assumed it was the other way around and queued up for an MRI scan.
Jeremy Hunt says, well, we've got to do away with this idea that just because people are experienced and knowledgeable and dedicated, they should be rewarded in some way. He said there should be some sort of performance-based thing based on how well they look after patients. And you sort of think, well, that should just be a given, really, shouldn't it? That if you're not looking after the patients, you're kind of in the wrong job, rather than, oh, that's good, he kept that one alive, he should get some... I mean, presumably, under the aegis of the kind of system that Hunt would like, Harold Shipman would not have been prosecuted, he would just have had to forego his bonus that year.
I think it's weird that you don't tip people. Like, you have, when you're in a cab, you tip your cab driver. But I don't know why we don't tip nurses. I mean, they do a better job than a cab driver has. I feel like if they've done a good job, just put a tenner in their pants.
I think you can get arrested for that, Holly. I just.
Always quite a good way of keeping doctors and nurses on their toes by breaking their morale. But publicly humiliating and suggesting that they're not valued is always quite a good thing to do to people who are wielding scalpels and syringes.
Do you know how big the MP pay rise is this year?
It's 11%.
11%. Yeah. Which is more than one, isn't it, I think?
There is an upside to the story. My daughter's studying to be a doctor, and apparently in the medical profession, they refer to genitals as 1%, because that's how much of the body they make up. So I just thought, how fantastic that the medical profession will have such a good laugh at all those pictures of Jeremy Hunt next to 1%. I just think it's... NHS staff have been told they will get a below-inflation pay rise next year, but not if they are due to get an annual progression pay increase. The Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, said the NHS could not afford to raise pay and would instead be handing out smaller rewards. Am I the only person thinking trophies and WH Smith vouchers? I give it a week before a doctor says to Jeremy Hunt, and how did that trophy get stuck up there?
Rewards is a worrying word.
It is,
there'll be
isn't
posters
it?
Up at A&E saying patients wanted dead or alive.
2 points to Miles. Holly, why might university now include less cramming and more spamming?
Is this the story about UCAS selling their mailing lists to advertisers? I was reading an article about it, and they were saying that the information was sent to companies who have a vested interest in impressing students. And as a result, 7,500 cans of Red Bull were sent out to students. And if there's one thing students hate, it's a free drink. And it does amaze me, though, because if I was at university, I was so square at university. Like, I genuinely only ever missed one lecture at university, and that was to go and pick up my Gold Duke of Edinburgh Award.
Wow.
I can only imagine if people sold my data to an advertising company, I would have been one of the first people to receive Saga magazine.
What were you reading? What did you read?
I did History of Art.
Did you? Colouring In. It's always a favourite.
That's a real royal family type of a degree, that,
I know,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's neither
yeah.
history nor art. It's like geography of French.
What did you study?
I trained to be a lawyer, a human rights lawyer, a very long time ago. I was going to do it. And somebody said, oh, come and work for me in the theatre for a year. And I thought, well, I'll have a gap year after university as well as before. And I am fundamentally having the longest gap year in history. I thought it was rather refreshing to see emails and addresses and personal information being sold, because they're normally left on a tray, aren't they?
It's stuff like emails and names, isn't it? It's not like they're going through your UCAS form and, like, for instance, taking off the fact that you were sort of chairman of your school council or, you know, secretary of the school wine tasting. Maybe a sort of unrepresentative view of general schooling. It is only that sort of stuff that's
it's
reasonably
your whole
readily
profile,
available.
Yeah, no, it's your interests.
Targeted advertising.
Oh, no, it's absolutely. What I liked about it, UCAS's website claims to be your gateway to undergraduates. How many disappointed perverts have logged on? Yes. No, it's absolutely. So
if you've got like a Latin A level, you're going to be bombarded with sort of spam emails from Castle's dictionaries saying you must get a new Latin to English translation dictionary and that sort of thing. That's terrifying.
Like, spoiler alert, Caecilius est in horto.
UCAS aren't actually breaking the law. I mean, we don't have to like it. It's a bit like the Archers, but it's...
I read this week that lots of students, potential students, are now choosing to go and study in Denmark instead, because it's apparently cheaper and better. And I was wondering, Sandy, if that's typical for things from Denmark.
I have to tell you that, in fact, it was Holland. And,
was it?
So interchangeable. Thank God you're not in charge of Russia.
I choose to believe it was Denmark as well.
Do you, Denmark?
Yeah.
It's all blonde people who are pleased with themselves, isn't it?
Last year, UCAS, the Universities and Colleges Admission Service, earned £12 million through its subsidiary firm, UCAS Media, by charging companies such as Microsoft, Red Bull and O2 to target advertising at applicants. A spokesman for UCAS denied they had done anything wrong, said the allegations were unfair, and slammed the door, refusing to come out of its room. One of the critics of UCAS was Emma Carr, Deputy Director of Big Brother Watch. Wow, what a difference a word order could make. Big Brother Watch, quoted in The Guardian. Watch Big Brother, topless photo in the Daily Star. There we are. 2 points to Holly. Jeremy, why are we filling a gap in the economy with a Chinese takeaway?
It's another math story about how we're enumerate. I've lost count of the number of stories enumeracy. I did do the test. I think it was in the Telegraph, and I got 100%. But then I felt that elation followed by a slight desolation at how pointless it was. You know, you suddenly feel pleased with yourself and think, yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's just some numbers, cold, dull numbers. And apparently it's important to know about maths. People who know about maths tend to be richer, because they can't form relationships, they don't have any dependents.
just to be at the risk of being a pedant, the Chinese part.
I don't know. I know, Chinese people... stereotypically, Chinese people are good at maths, because when they're at kindergarten, they're beaten with tiny violins.
they're bringing in a load of Chinese maths teachers.
They're not Danish?
Pretty sure. same sort of thing. You know, yes. They're bringing in lots of Chinese maths teachers to help teach maths in this country. Although I was confused. I read about this, I think, on one of the news websites, and it said up to 60 Shanghai maths teachers are to be brought to England. And I thought, well, that's the whole problem, isn't it? Up to 60. It's like, well, it's 1, 2 over. It's up to 60. I have no idea. It's just count the bloody people, you know. Yeah, so we're going to bring in a lot of Chinese maths teachers.
It doesn't sound like very many, does it? But maybe it works like homeopathy.
One in every borough.
Just a little bit of someone good at maths sort of everywhere.
Yeah. I did the test that you did, the maths test, but mine was in the Daily Mail. And I did it and I scored 15 out of 20, which apparently makes me most like Samantha from Sex and the City.
But if the Chinese are so good at maths, why is their New Year's always a month late? Perfectly reasonable question. I loved maths at school, actually. I absolutely thought it was fantastic. That mid-morning power nap set me up for the rest of the day. After it was estimated that low numeracy rates are costing the economy over £20 billion a year, the government is bringing over up to 60 maths teachers from China in order to help raise education standards. The teachers will teach British students Chinese methods of improving their math skills, and the English teachers will show Chinese students how to write boobs on their calculator.
Did you know that they don't call it mental arithmetic anymore? They call it personality disorder algebra.
2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, who has gone into the ins and outs of the in-out vote if he gets in?
Oh, dear. This is Ed Miliband. Ed Miliband has clarified Labour's referendum situation, although he has clarified it in such a manner that no one knows what he means. And I've been really struggling with this, trying to figure it out. And I decided that the best way to understand what everybody's saying about referendums, which is the plural, it's not referenda, people get that wrong, is if we think of it, instead of them talking about whether or not we should be in or out of Europe, we just talk about something far more simple, like what we should have for breakfast, right? So Labour, traditionally, has been of the view that people are idiots and you can't trust them to decide what they'll have for breakfast or else they'll choose something like gravel, for example. Whereas the Tories are of the view that people are very clever and will make the right decision, and the right decision being what Tories think we should have for breakfast, which is also gravel. Okay, bear with me. Now, recently things have changed and the Tories have decided there definitely will be a referendum on breakfast, but only once they've renegotiated the terms of breakfast so that the British people will have a choice between gravel and gravel, right? Whereas Labour has sworn there won't be a referendum at all unless the EU comes along and makes us have completely different healthy things for breakfast, such as grapefruit. Is that clear now?
I've rarely heard it explained with more precision, frankly.
Thank you. No, I mean, basically what's happening is the Tories have promised a referendum if they get in next time, and Labour have said they might do one if the terms of our membership change in such a manner as to take away more sovereignty, which they'd have to do anyway by law, but this is different because they're saying it.
But isn't it wonderful to hear Ed Miliband talking about what he will do in the next Labour government? It's like, I don't know, a 90-year-old relative suddenly discussing how he plans to run a marathon. It's just the most it's the most thrilling thing.
Well, the most wonderful thing, actually, about the Europe debate at the moment is it's finally gifted us a point to Nick Clegg. Because Nick Clegg has become the Europe guy. Because, you know, he's foreign to his heart, really, isn't he? He's got a sort of Spanish wife and kids called, like, Fernandez and Rasputin and stuff. And he's decided he's going to be the international guy. So he's taking on Farage and he's going to be our Europe guy.
Is it referendums, not referenda?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we let the audience decide that? Couldn't we just have a year off just to see how we get on? If we just said, look, it's not you, Europe, we just need some time to ourselves. Like, there's nobody else. This isn't about America. It's nothing. Oh, well, you get over America. It's nothing to do with America. Okay.
But I joked about the gravel and gravel thing, but actually the referendum they're about to have in the Crimea is basically, do you want to join Russia, yes or yes? I mean, that is it. That is what's on the ballot paper.
Can we vote to join Russia?
I am so not letting you vote for anything, darling. I'm not even going out for dinner with you.
Oh, right. Well, I'll change my plans.
Ed Miliband has said a future Labour government would not call an in-out referendum on the UK's membership of the EU unless it was being asked to transfer more powers to Brussels. Ed Miliband revealed these details in a speech he was making in London, which came as a disappointment to his audience, who were just expecting humorous anecdotes about the groom. Under a Conservative government, a referendum on Europe would be held in 2017. Under a Labour government, no referendum will take place unless there is a shift of power towards Brussels. And under a UKIP government, ash will rain down from the sky and four horsemen will appear on the horizon. 2 points to Hugo. At the end of round one, the scores are Miles and Holly have got 4 points, but so too have Jeremy and Hugo. We start round two with an extract from the Telegraph travel section.
Guernsey on a budget. For those wishing to go on scenic clifftop walks, the sweet, simple Le Barbary Hotel makes a great jumping-off point.
And our thanks to Barry Challens for sending us that. Miles, what's celebrating its 25th birthday by being handed the bill?
Oh, yes. The internet.
Have you more to say?
No. Does anyone want me to go and make any teas or coffees or anything?
I think it's a shame you can't get a hard copy of the internet. Because you used to be able to write off, you know, and you'd get the internet sent to you in book form to collect and keep in binders. Because now you can only get it online.
And it can be dangerous, the internet. Did you know, last week I spent 3 hours trapped under my mouse.
It's Tim Berners-Lee, isn't it?
It is.
He says we need a new Magna Carta to protect us from the NSA in America and from GCHQ. How did he invent it? Did he spill some penicillin on his computer?
Yeah.
And in the morning he came down and found the World Wide Web.
Are you a big internet user, Holly?
Yes, I love the internet.
Do you?
I absolutely love it. What? It worries me, though, that everybody's got hard drives and everybody's got laptops. And I think, in the same way that when you go up to your attic and your grandparents might have left love letters or all this kind of stuff that you would have as a sort of keepsake, our hard drives are going to be the antiques of the future. And our great-great-grandchildren are going to inherit our laptops and they're going to look through it and they're going to go, I must have inherited my love of BDSM off my great-great-grandfather. This is fascinating.
That's a driving school, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And a hard drive is when you've got tarmac in front of your house. I've no idea.
I think 25 years is long enough to spend considering something's worth or not, if something's a good idea or a bad idea. And quite honestly, I don't think it's been great. The number of things the internet has basically ruined, like the high street, the post office, the excitement of buying a three-day-old newspaper in Normandy or something. It's all gone.
There's always those belligerent technophobes on Radio 4. They've been interviewing them all week on PM or something. These people say, well, I can't abide the wretched things. Why does anybody need information or facts or news? I don't have a telephone at all. And I think so long as you speak loudly and clearly, you shouldn't need a telephone.
Yes, that is 100% what my parents are like. My mum, we gave her a mobile phone for Christmas last year because she's not quite old enough for one of those red emergency buttons. And she shakes it for better reception. You know, like when batteries used to run out and you think, oh, give it a bit of a shake, it might get the juices going. That's what she does. She also, we bought her a laptop and she uses it as a tray. That's an £800 tray.
On the 25th anniversary of the World Wide Web, its inventor, Tim Berners-Lee, has called for an online bill of rights to be published to advance a free and open web for everyone. Tim Berners-Lee originally proposed the World Wide Web on the 12th of March 1989 when, stuck in Switzerland working on the CERN project, he suddenly thought, I wish it was easier to find cute pictures of cats. David Cameron has pledged that the UK will remain at the cutting edge of internet technology, according to a statement made on his MySpace page. That's a rather good internet joke. 2 points to Miles. Holly, why has the five-second rule been picked up and dusted down?
Well, this is the five-second rule, which people know as the amount of time you can drop food on the floor before you can pick it up and eat it. And this has been proven by experts or scientists or whatever. Microbiologists, to be precise. Which
very small ones.
Tiny ones. Smaller than Sandy. That's incredible. That it is, in fact, true, which I find bizarre because that's common sense, isn't it? The longer you leave something on the floor, the longer it has a chance for germs to jump all over it. This is one of those stories where I just think, why are you proving the five-second rule and not curing cancer?
It's important, though. Yeah, so you're a young person, but for those of us over 50, bending is no small matter.
He's making a very good point there, because it can't be 5 seconds for every single foodstuff. I mean, you soup, you're going to have to get a straw, do you know what I mean?
And it depends what you drop it on. Apparently, carpet is the best thing, because the bacteria is held in the carpet.
Well, it's
whereas if you drop it just in feces.
What I like about the 5 second rule, though, is as if we have an understanding with the germs. Like there was some sort of treaties, and we sat down and said, look, I'll tell you what, when we drop food on the floor, you give us 5 seconds to pick it up. And in return, you can have all public toilets. That's. But also the idea that when you drop food on the floor, germs are like, all right, lads, hold back. All right, 1 salmonella, 2 salmonella, 3.
I once ate a whole shepherd's pie off the floor and, you know, the restaurant didn't even charge me for it.
As a kid, though, if you drop food on the floor, you were still expected to eat it. My mum would pick it up. She'd be like, it's all right, you can still eat that. And she'd... she'd flop. I'd be like, I'm not eating that. I just saw you flop all over it. I mean, there's no medical basis that blowing on something removes the... Otherwise, you'd all be in the doctors and they'd be like, all right, Miss Walsh, you'd like to open your legs, prepare for your smear test.
My dad used to say, you've got to eat a peck of dirt in your life. He used to go around putting a spoonful of horse shit on all of our plates. Because it's about your immune system. If we're too hygienic...
Yeah, no, you do have a bit of...
We get weedy from not eating enough excrement.
And best story I ever heard was a friend of mine worked in a well-known pizza chain. This is quite a well-known thing, but if you work in a pizza restaurant, you often help yourself to a little bit of the topping off the top of the pizza. It's sort of a perk of the job. So this family came in to order a meat feast, and my friend took a bit of sort of pepperoni off the top when they're in the kitchen, popped it in their mouth, walked through the double doors, went up to the table, put it down. The entire family just sat there staring them in absolute disgust. And it was at this moment that they realised there was a string of mozzarella going all the way from the top of the pizza to their mouth.
A study from Aston University in Birmingham has shown that there is merit in the 5-second rule, which states dropped food can be eaten as long as it is retrieved from the floor within 5 seconds. Scientists dropped toast, sweets, biscuits and pasta on the floor before sobering up and carrying on with their experiment. There are other 5-second rules. It's how long you have to listen to Thought for the Day before tuning to Radio 3. 2 points to Holly. Hugo, why was Brooks Boy billed for breaking a bus stop with a bundle of Brocks?
Okay, this is going to sound like I'm drunk, but what happened was Kelly Brooks' ex-gladiator boyfriend crashed a van full of dead badgers into a lamppost.
when that happens.
Again.
It's one of the best stories ever.
It's like one of those sentences where everyone has to write down a word and then you fold it. And then the next person, you know, gets up. No, but this actually happened, apparently.
It was a bus stop, not a lamppost.
Was it a bus stop?
Yeah,
it was
a bus stop. Yeah.
I mean, you've got to understand this properly, because as always with badgers, it's not just black and white. He was involved in the badger cull. These were dead badgers. This wasn't how he was culling them. That would have been weird.
Did he beat them to death with a giant cotton bud?
Yes. No. Was there ever a gladiator called Badger? That'd be rubbish. Just mildly irritated the contestants. No, he was involved in the badger cull, and there were lots of dead badgers, which he was taking elsewhere. And he claimed in court, I think, that he'd been checking for a message from police about where the badger supporters were. But the other guy who was in the van with him claimed he fell asleep. And so he crashed.
What I loved about this, he was fined £91 plus a £20 victim surcharge. What are dead badgers going to do with £20? This is the most glorious story. I had no idea you can be paid to put a badger in a furnace.
You can barbecue a badger. In France, badger is a delicacy.
Is it?
Yep.
Everything's a delicacy in France.
I am a huge badger fanatic, as it happens.
Oh, in what sense?
Well, I did Mastermind a few years ago, and the European badger was my specialist subject. And when I was 6, I was on a documentary on ITV about my love of badgers. And I'm a big badger fan.
Okay, yeah, I don't know you well, but there's a weird side to you, Holly.
People say that. But Owen Paterson, the Environment Secretary, who is responsible for this genocide of badgers, says, oh, yes, I'm very fond of badgers myself. In fact, I was raised by badgers when both my parents died in an unfortunate croquet accident.
My favourite badger is the South African honey badger, because I lived in South Africa for a while, and it was the animal you always wanted to see when you went out into the bush. They're quite small, badger-sized, but they...
No, they're way, way smaller than a badger. European badger.
Don't start her on the badger thing. Yeah. Start her on the badger thing.
They're a third of the size.
They're just roughly badger-sized, you know. So they could be eaten by anything, but they're really vicious and everything's scared of them. And they'll attack any animal, like buffalo, lion, anything. And we saw one out the window, and what it was doing was it was sitting on its back legs and it was eating, as though it were an ice cream, a cobra. That's how hard they are.
I love the idea of having a favourite badger at all. That never even occurred to me. Have you got a favourite badger, Miles?
I amazingly have no badger anecdotes. I would love to contribute more at this stage, yeah. But for whatever, it seems to be a hole in my background. Yeah. Never...
On-off boyfriend of model Kelly Brook, Dave McIntosh, has been fined after crashing a van carrying dead badgers into a bus stop during a cull in Gloucestershire. Many bloodied dead badgers were gathered in the back of the van after a cull, finally answering the question, what's black and white and red all over? In all, 921 badgers were killed in Gloucestershire and another 940 shot in Somerset in what has been described as the most upsetting production of The Wind in the Willows ever staged. The crash happened during a pilot badger cull. Presumably pilot badgers are easier to spot than normal badgers because of their flying goggles and big flappy white scarves. For those of you who don't know, Gladiators was a TV show which pitched ordinary members of the public against highly trained professionals in an artificially raucous atmosphere. The idea was based on Gardner's Question Time. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Bill Murray, who's very famous for the film Ghostbusters. And it was seen as a postcard ad in the Market Drayton branch of Wilkinson's. Ladies' bike wanted by elderly chap who is having trouble getting his leg over.
Ms. Walsh.
This is from the Stoke-on-Trent Sentinel, and it says, a horse has been trapped up to its neck in mud on a road but remains in stable condition.
Yay! Aye, thank you. Mr. Rifkind.
This has been sent in by Andrew Wills, and this is a story from the Daily Mail, and it's about this woman who Nigel Farage has been accused of having had an affair with, but denies it, we should say. And it says, her company website also offers advice on what to do if a journalist calls. When the Mail contacted her for comment by phone yesterday, she hung up.
Let's take a look at the final score. Miles and Holly have got 12 points, but this week's winners, because they read the papers, are Jeremy and Hugo with 25 points. Before we leave you, here is an extract from the pop-out guide to Amsterdam sent in by Simon Koppel.
In the heart of the Red Light District, the oldest existing church in Amsterdam has a long tradition of famous organs.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Miles Jarp, Holly Walsh, Jeremy Hardy and Hugo Rifkind. In the chair was Sandy Togsvig and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Tom Neenan and John Hunter, with additional material by Matt Green, James Bug and Gráinne Maguire. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.